Hi, it's Kate Brownfield from ADHDKidsCanThrive.com. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. My guest today is Nicole Laurent, a licensed mental health counselor who helps people use Kenergetic Dietary Therapy as a treatment for mental illness and neurological issues. She uses a variety of nutritional and functional methods of treatment in her work and provides evidence-based psychotherapy modalities in adult clients. She has specialized training and clinical skills, including BT, CBT, DBT, and EMDR, and is trained in nutritional and metabolic therapies for mental health. Please enjoy this conversation. Hi, Nicole. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I am really looking forward to this conversation with you today. We are going to dive into specifically nutrition and how that impacts an ADHD child or human being, anybody really who has ADHD. And there's a lot of changes going on in this field. I feel like a lot of new information is finally coming to the forefront. And so I'm glad you're here to share with us and keep us updated.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really important topic.
Okay, so let's start with, there are so many changes going on right now in psychiatry. Specifically, I think the term is called metabolic psychiatry. Mm-hmm. And what is that and how does that impact a child who may be struggling with ADHD and other things?
Well, there hasn't, to my knowledge, there hasn't been any studies kind of using metabolic psychiatry interventions. Well, that's not true. So metabolic psychiatry encompasses all kinds of different interventions that improve mitochondrial function. So metabolic psychiatry is about improving mitochondrial function and or taking out things that impair mitochondrial function so that mitochondria can do what they need to do well in order to drive brain metabolism. And so sometimes, you know, sleep interventions are considered metabolic psychiatry intervention, but the kind of the hot metabolic psychiatry intervention that's really just blowing up out there for really good reason is the ketogenic diet specifically. And I don't know how much your listeners know about the ketogenic diet, but it's a therapeutic diet that kind of shifts brain metabolism and provides brain energy through an alternative fuel source known as ketone bodies. And it is just amazing. I work with people all the time with schizoaffective disorder and bipolar disorder that are getting huge improvements using metabolic psychiatry that in ways that they never got from medication before. And so it's just a very exciting field. But the ketogenic diet has been used in the field of childhood and adult epilepsy. So it is an evidence-based treatment for that particular brain disorder. But what the research literature shows is that it improves brain function across the board, multiple neurological disorders and the underlying pieces that are seen are the underlying pathological mechanisms seen in a variety of mental health diagnoses are affected by what the ketogenic diet does.
Yeah. Okay. And so ketogenic means low carb.
Yeah. Well, so it has to be low carb because it is the reduction in carbohydrates to therapeutic level, to a level in which the body has to use the alternative fuel source of ketones, which they get by burning body fat or through dietary fatty acid intake.
Okay, so before I get too much into the weeds, though, if you talk about ADHD, it often comes with what we call like friends, right? Where an ADHD person might struggle with anxiety or depression, OCD, autism, bipolar could go into that, right? It's just
sleep spectrum. Disturbances,
all
of it. And just because RCTs using the ketogenic diet with ADHD have not occurred, as far as I know, that does not mean that a ketogenic diet is not an appropriate or some type of lower carb intervention that at least intermittently produces ketones for neural network stabilization is not appropriate. So areas of pathology that get addressed by ketogenic diets include glucose hypometabolism. So ADHD brains exhibit hypometabolism, meaning low energy usage in certain areas of the brain, like the prefrontal cortex, the anterior cingulate, and it's an inefficient use of glucose for energy for whatever reason. And so ketogenic diets produce ketones that are diffused directly into the neuronal membrane and act as an alternative fuel, and that bypasses the need for glucose transporters. And it can really improve brain energy metabolism in the frontal cortex, in that of the brain that needs to be turned on for impulse control, focus, all that good stuff.
What about mood?
Yeah. Mood. Yeah. You have to have a fully functioning frontal lobe that works enough to regulate mood. That, I mean, think about it. When we get tired, right? Our frontal lobe's tired. It's not working. It's shutting down and we get cranky. And so, yes, in order to regulate mood, you have to have a frontal lobe that works. It's part of why people with head injuries, for example, have mood disturbance.
Okay, interesting. Okay, so when you talk about getting these ketones and low carb, I've learned this on my own journey. So, and I know just talking to people in my community, it's still really confusing, right? Like nutrition that's presented on the World Wide Web is overwhelming and confusing. So a couple things, like going gluten-free can be a low carb option, but like if you overeat gluten-free foods, you could still be having a very large carb intake, right? And so you're not really going low carb just being gluten-free. So if you eat a bunch of processed gluten-free foods, right, you're still not getting to what you're not changing things the way you want to.
In fact, some of the flours used in gluten-free products and gluten-free cooking can actually increase blood glucose levels even harder than just good old healthy whole grains, right? And so, you know, it really depends on. So let me talk about just a little bit about, there's a difference between nutritional psychiatry and metabolic psychiatry. Nutritional psychiatry is interested in micronutrient deficiencies and insufficiencies. And it's very interested in the direct effect of certain foods on mood, right?
Yeah.
So they're very into wanting to understand the microbiome. They are likely to take gluten out of the picture. They are, you know, all that good stuff. They're experimenting with dairy, in and out, that sort of thing. And that's very, very valuable. And a metabolic psychiatrist might also think about those things. For example, a well-formulated ketogenic diet that's focused on brain health actually does completely exclude grains. So you wouldn't be getting gluten-free grains or grains of any kind on a ketogenic diet, because the carbohydrate intake has to be reduced enough to shift the fuel source, the primary fuel source being used in the brain. The presence of ketones is very important to brain energy and to brain metabolism. And so you can see the lever that you pull is just a little bit different between those two.
Okay, so as a, let's say, parent for this podcast, like how do you decide? I mean, I guess what I'm reading and seeing, which is why I have you here, is that to go in this direction that you're suggesting, there's really a positive impact that is coming from patients who are struggling with their mental health.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Versus the nutritional psychiatry isn't always making a huge impact versus, I mean, it may impact your body in different ways, but maybe not neurologically.
Yeah. Well, in nutritional psychiatry, you know, there's a lot of kids with ADHD symptoms. And part of why they're having ADHD symptoms is they do not have sufficient micronutrients and amino acids intake that they need for their brain to function optimally. And that's the honest truth. Like, and then you have individual differences in genetic differences, for example, and there's people, children, adults and children who don't make adequate levels of choline. And choline is a precursor to acetylcholine. And you need acetylcholine to focus. And you need acetylcholine to pay attention. And you need acetylcholine for a healthy sleep in the brainstem. And so, you know, children growing have extreme micronutrient needs. And part of why we see, you know, in addition to societal complexities, but we also see increases in mental illnesses in adolescence, in part because those growth aspects deplete micronutrient stores over time. And so, you know, nutritional psychiatry and functional psychiatry, which is a field that considers both nutritional and hopefully metabolic principles in its work, by no means are those small interventions for ADHD. And in fact, there's a really great a specialist in ADHD. His name is James Greenblatt. And he has a book called Finally Focused that kind of talks about systematically going through some of these pieces with ADHD. You know, iron. Children are often low in iron. There's lots of pieces to it, you know, digestive health, so on and so forth. But that's one piece. Now, not every child with ADHD would need necessarily a ketogenic diet, although a ketogenic diet or one, a less restrictive form of a ketogenic diet, right? So we don't want to reduce protein intake and put someone with ADHD unnecessarily on a classic ketogenic diet ratio because protein is a little bit low. And with children, they need a lot of protein to grow. And so there's less protein restrictive forms of ketogenic diets, like modified Atkins diets, for example, that don't even restrict protein, but really only restrict the carbohydrate intake for the production of ketones. But ketogenic diets do improve a lot of the neurotransmitter imbalances associated and seen with ADHD. So it improves the functioning of things like serotonin, dopamine, noradrenaline, and the glutamate GABA effects that are part of ketogenic diet, part of what stops seizures. So GABA is an inhibitory neurotransmitter and it calms anxiety really well. So, you know, you also see downregulation of brain-derived neurotrophic factor in ADHD and ketones. At least one of the ketone bodies that are produced on a ketogenic diet upregulate BDNF. There's nothing like a ketogenic diet for neuroinflammation, you know? So it's not so much that every child with ADHD needs a ketogenic diet. There might be micronutrient insufficiencies and deficiencies that are low-hanging fruit that can be addressed maybe with a broad spectrum micronutrient formula, such as what's, you know, provided by Hardee's Nutritionals. They provide a really well-balanced micronutrient supplement that children can use. In fact, the first place I learned about Hardee's Nutritionals was a child and adolescent psychiatric symposium. So there are doctors who use broad spectrum micronutrients in the treatment of ADHD, if only to help reduce the amount of stimulant medication that is needed.
Yeah.
And those stimulants, there's a micronutrient deficiency syndrome that is a part of long-term stimulant use.
Oh,
that is not talked about, that is not discussed as part of informed consent. And, you know, I don't know how many adults I see where they're in their 30s. They've been on stimulants for their whole life and their stimulants just stop working. And then, oh, I guess that's just my ADHD brain. That's just what it is. Well, it also could be that you are so micronutrient deficient and insufficient now that you do not have basic materials you need in order to make your neurotransmitters. And I think we're just really missing the mark by not helping people with the nutrition aspect of this disorder.
Yeah, I agree. So I've learned this in my own life. So my question is, a lot of professionals and pros in ADHD will say, and I think as parents, you depend on your pediatrician, right? To be the point person to guide you in the direction of where you should go with your child and the decisions that you should make. And none of them talk about nutrition. So my are very little, not to this level of detail that you're sharing with us and that you talk about on social media and stuff. Is the American Pediatric Association going to get on board with this? Because ADHD is on the rise. I think parents, you know, we always want the best for our children. And that's our first stop. That's where we go when we're like, our child's having a hard time in school. They're having a hard time at home. What do I do? Are they going to get on board? Do you know, just from your work of advocating for this, that
I think there are a professional association like that, you know, I can't necessarily comment on. I do know that there are psychiatrists more and more that are understanding that you have to have zinc and iron on board for an antidepressant to even work. You know, like you have to, it's not enough to keep serotonin in the synapse. You actually have to have the materials needed to make enough serotonin to begin with for that to be helpful. So I think that, you know, I don't know. I think that we have such a psychopharmacology viewpoint in modern medicine that it is detrimental, because we're completely ignoring a whole other area of really well done RCT research showing a huge nutritional component to mental illness that is not being addressed by our doctors currently. So I don't know. You know, I really don't spend a lot of time focusing on those big associations. I think that they're going to have to catch up. I think that any parent who is trying to get these symptoms under control or taken care of through that system are going to find holes in the treatment that makes them curious. And just like you, makes them reach out and start to do their own research. And they're going to find that. We really need, it'd be great to see some RCTs using ketogenic diets with different ADHD populations. That would be useful. But I think that we can't necessarily wait for everybody to get on board and in an agreement. Children grow very fast.
Yeah, they do.
So we don't have time for that.
Yeah. And so thank you for being with me on the podcast, because I think for my listeners, right, who are trying to figure it out, I appreciate you sharing all your knowledge. And as I listen to you, and in my own experience too, the American diet is just really going against everything you're saying we should be doing as parents and a family. And so it's very challenging, right, to navigate the grocery stores and even snacks that are presented in our schools to our kids and all of that. It makes it very, very challenging to have your kid eat in certain ways, right, when the general public is not eating that way. But I did want to share with you, ask you too, like sugar is another big carb that is labeled, that's technically a carb. I never knew that until I really dug into this myself. I don't know what I really thought of sugar as, but I didn't realize it was considered a carb. And that's really detrimental, right, to your mental health and your whole body actually too. So limiting sugar is like a huge step that a parent could take to help their child, right?
Absolutely. And when sugary treats are being handed out as rewards at school, it makes it very difficult. So much of the nutritional information that goes into our national guidelines, our dietary guidelines, is based on very poorly done associational epidemiological studies. And it is not provided from what we understand about human biochemistry. And so for all of your listeners, I really recommend, there's a book that just came out by Georgia Eade. She's a psychiatrist, and she has written a whole book that is based on actual human nutritional biochemistry. It is wonderful. It is called Change Your Diet, Change Your Mind. And I think that if we all had just had that in high school as a textbook, we would be in a very different place, both with our mental health and our physical health.
Okay, good to know. I'll put that book, link to that book in the description here below. Okay, Nicole, I wanted to ask you too about animal products. Okay, so if you go keto or you're trying to go low carb, you were going to, and you just said too, as children, they need a lot of animal products, right? The protein.
Yeah.
To help their brain and stuff. And I think in our culture, there's a lot of confusion about animal products and eating. Like, are they good for the, you know, are we overeating? Is it ruining climate change? Do we need to worry about the antibiotics that are in meat? Like, what's your guidance for parents who are listening today, who have like these little things that you hear in the news and on social media about consuming animal products? Like, what do we need to, how do we navigate that?
So there's a great book that talks about the debate around environment. It's called Sacred Cow, and it is very carefully researched, and it talks about regenerative agriculture. Yes, the feedlot cows are, it's not a great system for the environment. However, it is a much smaller piece of the pollution puzzle, of the environment puzzle, than industry, other industry, for example. So there's lots of people who very ethically eat animal products and try to be very thoughtful and careful about where they source their meat and whether, you know, what they're sourcing is part of a regenerative agriculture cycle. Now, that said, lots of people heal on conventionally raised red meat. You do not have to source grass-fed meat in order to get adequate amino acids and nutrient-dense, you know, food that animal products provide. Don't get hung up on that. Don't think you got to have grass-fed everything. My goodness. So lots of people heal just on regular old cheap meat that's on sale at the Safeway. Okay. Like, don't deny yourself that because you somehow feel like you're destroying the planet. Your best thing for this planet is to have a working brain where you're functioning and thriving. That's really what's best for everybody. And once you're functioning and thriving, then maybe perhaps you can make other decisions, or if you choose to, about where to get your meat or not. But first things first, let's just get your brain healthy.
Yeah. And you're probably better off having some meat versus Pop-Tarts, right? If you're making a choice on your budget.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, I don't know how much time we have, but I'll tell you a quick story. So I worked with a adolescent, I think sophomore in high school. And I had them track their food for 3 days, and they were not getting adequate protein with their diet, which included Pop-Tarts. This person was only getting about 20 grams a day of protein. And I said to them, you are not even getting enough amino acids to even make your neurotransmitters.
How much protein did he need, like, for a sophomore in high school?
Well, it depends on your ideal weight, okay, your weight and such. So I can't really give numbers, but it's way more than 20. We're talking at least 60 and 100 grams of protein. And this is someone who was sedentary and not athletic in any way, shape, or form. But all we did was add a whey shake in the morning. I said, you can't have the Pop-Tart until you have the whey shake. They got the whey shake and their depression and anxiety improved exponentially. You just cannot, you cannot expect your brain to work properly and ignore your nutrition. That is, you know, Georgia Eads says that's where brain chemicals come from. And she's absolutely right. But in our society, we have such a blind spot to nutrition that instead of making sure people have the adequate things that their brain needs to work, we will just give them a diagnosis and say, your brain is broken on a neurological level.
Yes.
And I get teenagers all the time who come to me that say, I think I have ADHD. You need to evaluate me for ADHD. And I say, I can't possibly evaluate you for ADHD until we make sure that your brain has at least the basic things it needs to work. After we decide whether your brain has the basic things it needs to work, then we can decide whether you perhaps have ADHD symptoms. But until then, it's ridiculous to give that diagnosis, in my humble opinion.
I agree. Well, and then if you've been given that diagnosis, I think following your guidance can make a huge impact on reversing that all the way or dramatically improving symptoms, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, Nicole, as we wrap up, do you have any other, you've said so much in this short period of time, any other words of wisdom that you'd like to leave parents with when it comes to nutrition for their children, especially when they're struggling with ADHD, anxiety, depression, mood, emotional regulation, all these things that are really hard within a family unit, right? And I think people are, you know, you're just searching for like, how do I improve things?
I think keep looking past just the stimulant piece. I know that is very helpful for many families, and I get it. And sometimes even with really strong nutritional supports, that can be helpful. And I'm not slamming it, that's for sure. But there's a whole nother piece to optimal brain function, and your children should be thriving. And so this is an area to kind of look at and explore and think about. And you know what else I would say? I would say, watch out for the parental want, need, and urge to get approval from other parents. It's hard to be that parent that says, no, we're not having sugar right now, or no, we're not eating that right now, or it brings up our own stuff as adults.
Yes, it does.
And as individuals, it's a real thing. And you know, adult relationships are funny. And sometimes when we say, no, I'm not giving that to my kid, well, that brings up someone else's stuff where now they feel judged because they choose to give that to their kid, right? So don't, you know, understand that there's that dynamic also going on that's making this more difficult and more complicated. But if you nail this down, the benefits are going to be really great. And so it's worth exploring.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Nicole. This was great. I really appreciate your time today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.